Hello, you're listening to the This is the Way Phase 4 podcast, and I'm your host, Steve LaScalza. Today's discussion is about the fifth and penultimate episode of Hawkeye, available for streaming on Disney Plus December 15th, 2021. Marvel Studio content released as of today's podcast is fair game for discussion, so consider this your only spoiler warning. We have a giveaway going on right now, and I think we will have an announcement on a giveaway recipient on our next podcast. That means there's still time to enter. You can listen to our past podcast for rules for entry, but you'll need a Twitter account and know how to use it. Our Twitter at and Instagram handles are the same, at The Way Phase 4. If you'd like to visit our Facebook page and leave a comment, facebook.com/TheWayPhase4. You can also email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com.
Now tell me this. If I send an email, where would I put the stamp?
We got you now, bro.
Episode 5 is titled Ronin. The full description on Disney Plus for the episode: after a fallout between Clinton and Kate, the younger Archer is ready to abandon her dream of becoming a hero. Meanwhile, a guilt-ridden Clint prepares to go face-to-face with the Tracksuit Mafia, owning up to past actions. Everything changes, however, when Kate makes a surprising discovery. The brief description: a fallout nearly derails their partnership, but Kate makes a discovery that changes everything. The directors for Episode 5 are again the team of Bert and Bertie. This is their last episode, because I believe the finale will be back in Rhys Thomas's hands. He had the first and second episodes. There is another previously on segment, but it doesn't start the streaming after the Disney Plus. Like in episode 2, 3, and 4, there is that segment, but there's also a cold open before this one, and more on that in a moment. Writing credits for this one go to Jenna Noelle Frazier. The runtime says 45 minutes, but I look for the first new action, then I go until the screen cuts to black before the end credits. So I timed it out. Episode 5 clocks 32 minutes, 24 seconds after the title slate, which comes after that previously on segment. But that comes after a cold open, which starts right after the Disney Plus snap. And that runs for 4 minutes, 46 seconds. So that totals up to about 37 minutes of new action in this episode.
Why are you making it so tough on us, bro?
Hello, I'm Steve LaScalzo for Cufflinks.com. December is a month of giving, whether it's your time, charity, or gifts to loved ones. If you need ideas to close out 2021 with some class, try visiting Cufflinks.com. There, you'll find a small, family-run business with over 3,000 accessories available from the biggest brands and fandoms. Cufflinks, yes, of course. But you can find ties, tie bars, lapel pins, shirt studs, socks, and much, much more. The Marvel offerings will amaze you. Iron Man, Captain America, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, Thor, Spider-Man, X-Men. You can choose bright, colorful accessories or wear something so subtle even Hawkeye would have to look twice to notice. You don't have to have the need for cufflinks to appreciate the quality, and you just might find yourself considering that bow tie or deciding between gift sets when you take a look at the items. There's more than Marvel, DC, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, sports leagues like MLB, NFL, NHL, collegiate offerings, and of course Star Wars. In fact, just like our Star Wars themed podcast, we can offer you 15% off your purchase. You just have to enter The Way 15 in the coupon code box at checkout. You don't need to bid against Armand and Jack at a secret black market auction. You can dazzle a crime kingpin or take the focus off your 10 rings of power. You can look marvelous while wearing Marvel. Cufflinks.com has you covered, no matter which universe you call home. Check out Cufflinks.com today. Immediately following the Disney Plus snap splash screen, there's a cold open that picks up in 2018 with Yelena Belova. It starts with voiceover from her and Natasha Romanoff, and then there's a bunch of drone shots over snowy streams, tree-covered mountainsides. The dialogue's clipped from the Black Widow movie, and it stops after the special whistle that the sisters developed in childhood, and then they kept that into their reunion in adulthood, of course. It also stops on a mountainside villa over a valley town below. Yelena and her fellow widow, Sonia, are at this house to free the widow, Anna. They get in and confront her in the hall. There's a brief fight, and they subdue her on her living room carpet and administer the subjugation counteragent chemical spray that freed Yelena from her mind control early in Black Widow. Except it doesn't work. Anna wasn't brainwashed. I'm not sure why, unless it's to show that not every agent working for Dracov needed to be controlled, or maybe Anna is an older recruit and she was put in before, like kind of like Natasha, before the brainwashing was really needed. The two women acting against Florence Pugh here are, let me just say, outmatched. I won't bring up their names, but to me they stuck out and not in a good way. Yelena, the character, is just much better, and she talks about the process of freeing the other widows, and then takes a break, maybe to collect her thoughts, and she goes to the bathroom, and boy, is it dusty in there. Yelena was snapped. At first, I didn't know what was happening, and I think that was effective for me, because I got to experience a little bit of that, you know, what's going on here, that Yelena, the character, must have been feeling. She then walks out and onto Anna's family, and they were formed during the snap. That family unit was formed during the snap, because remember, before it was just Anna, or maybe Anna and her husband or something, but they apparently adopted a little girl. And then Yelena starts panicking about needing to contact Natasha. And she's going to learn some bad news on that front, right? And then we get the previously on segment.
Can you help me find Natasha? I need to tell her I'm okay.
After the previously on, we then get a title screen for Hawkeye. There's no arrow shot animation into the lowercase a bullseye this time. Maybe that signifies the breakup of the arrangement between Clint and Kate. Miss Bishop returns to the palatial downtown New York penthouse of her mother, and Eleanor comes out to welcome her daughter. She's concerned.
Are you okay? And why are you wearing your archery suit?
I'm okay.
But she also continues her sneaky ploys. She asks if her injuries have anything to do with Clint Barton. Maybe she's still trying to figure out why the widow she hired roughed up her little girl when it was only supposed to be Clint getting whacked. Kate still trusts her mother, so she tells Eleanor, "You'll be glad to know, Clint told me to go home and stay away." No. Eleanor wanted to see Kate tearfully talk about the murder of her hero. Mother and daughter move upstairs to Kate's old room, where Eleanor helps dress her wounds. It's a theme that we're seeing in this series, about who do you go to when you're hurt? Who do you trust to take care of you when you're not at your best? I do think that Eleanor does only want to take care of Kate, and that it's her driving force behind all the things she's doing, but she also wants to protect herself a little bit too. At one point, Kate says she really thought she could have been one of them, meaning an Avenger. Eleanor doesn't attack that dream. She simply says that paths wind around in ways you would never have expected, and you just have to keep moving forward. Kate asks if her mom ever worries about her not finding her path. And the reply is actually quite motherly and supportive.
No. I know exactly who you are. And I have a pretty good picture of who you're becoming.
Kate then tells her mom that Jack has a shell company and that she needs to promise to at least look into him in Sloan Limited, and Eleanor finally agrees. Her mom then tells her, get her things from her apartment, which is above the peach joint, and come back and stay at the penthouse. Meanwhile, Maya's emotional support is Kazi, though she'll feel dirty about that later, I'm sure. He's helping her dress her wounds, the ones from the Black Widow red taser darts, and, you know, the arrow to the shoulder, though it feels like she should be in a lot more pain from that, and I don't really see him touching up her shoulder at all. It seems like it's just those darts. Kazi tells her she needs to stop, just like Clint asked last episode. But then he agrees to hunt Ronan for her, and then she's supposed to fall in line, like he's going to help her find him, kill him, and then she'll stop. But isn't that what she would do anyways if she accomplished her goal? I mean, the whole goal is killing Ronan. So, yeah, of course she'll stop after she does what she set out to do, right?
Kate Bishop.
Hi.
Kate returns home to her apartment and sees some of the damage caused by the Molotov cocktail fire. And then she tries throwing a sriracha bottle at Yelena. Then there's another callback to the movie Black Widow, where young Yelena in Ohio told her mom she loves mac and cheese. That's what she made while she's waiting for Kate to come back to her place. We learn Kate has only one fork, that even an empty-handed widow is carrying weapons. Alexei Shostakov thinks mac and cheese is good for you, and that if she really wanted to, Yelena could have killed Kate before she walked through her front door.
If I wanted to kill you,
you would have already.
Right as you opened the door.
Yeah, well, I probably wouldn't have even had time to shut it.
No.
I'd have been dead.
No.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Clint is not going back to Aunt Moira's. Maybe it's been compromised. So he looks up grills from the LARPers and firefighters. The costume thief with a heart of gold, right? Grills lets him come up to his apartment. And I found it interesting that he lived in apartment 4F, which in the selective service means not fit for military service. But this guy as a firefighter in New York, right? He's a hero. It's a short scene, and then we're back to Kate and Yelena. Yelena loves her hot sauce, apparently, and tells Kate it's her first time in New York, so she wants to sightsee. Kate is on guard, but it's also funny to see Yelena so disarming with her charm. Yelena tells her she wants to see the Empire State Building, the new and improved Statue of Liberty, and Rockefeller Center. And I think the statue references what you may have seen if you've seen trailers for Spider-Man No Way Home. It's the addition of Captain America's shield to the statue. And this whole scene that between Kate and Yelena is both awkward and enjoyable. Yelena tells Kate she loves American Christmases, the tree, the presents, the super-powered reindeer, which when you put it together with her comment about having eaten reindeer, is oddly appropriate since her skill set is almost designed to kill super-powered people. But not eating them, I hope. Kate says she has not had the pleasure of eating reindeer.
No, it is not a pleasure.
No, it's really tough. It's chewy. You have to braise it for a really long time.
Kate suggests a park and market for Yelena to visit and catches on that Yelena saying her full name is a power move. Yelena admits yes. She knows a lot about her and lists off her mom, the penthouse, her dad, deceased, her standing at university, and how Kate went into traffic to save the dog, which is probably the social media event that tipped Yelena off to come to New York. Kate asks if she's here to talk to Clint.
No. I'm here to kill him.
Kate is a little shocked. Yelena wants to know why Kate and seemingly everyone has forgiven Clint for his murderous past, as Ronan, but perhaps also before it, too. Kate says Clint saved the world, but Yelena is mad at that suggestion because she wants everyone to know it is Natasha and her sacrifice that saved the world. Kate is surprised to hear that Yelena and Natasha are sisters and says she's glad she didn't kill Yelena on the roof. Yelena finds that hysterical. But that's really only because she assumes, like everyone else, including Clint did, that she's not even close to being a match for her. Kate points out Natasha and Clint were friends. Yelena insinuates that Kate is naive. He's not there for Kate. He's there to protect his reputation, at least that's what Yelena thinks. To make her point, she brings up a kill count. But that's really a smokescreen, isn't it? How many people have the widows killed? Natasha included. Yelena. This is the kind of fact that's a shock and awe kind of statistic in an argument. Kate doesn't fall for it.
The trail of blood that follows him, you could wrap around the entire world.
Okay, wow. That was very Russian.
Kate says he's still an Avenger, and Yelena fires back with, what does that word even mean? And you have to wonder if the world really is giving all of them a pass for everything. On the one hand, if they don't deserve it, who does? On the other, it's the argument Natasha found herself on the other side of in the Civil War storyline, since Secretary Ross wanted to have an accountability and oversight for Avengers after Sokovia. Kate falls into a little bit of an argument trap and reasons there's going to be collateral damage, and she actually uses that phrase. That upsets Yelena even more. I wonder if the world knows, or Kate knows, or anyone knows, that Clint tried to make the sacrifice that Natasha did. Is that Avengers-level clearance stuff? Surely someone knows. Because I don't think it's out of line for one of the Avengers to ask Clint at some point in time, hey, what happened on Vormir? And why isn't Natasha back with you? Kate's in a position where she knows it's idol worship. But it's no longer worship from afar, so her opinion has some value. She's met him, right? I don't know if Clint has met Yelena, although I'm sure they've heard about each other through Natasha, and a later scene kind of bears that out. There's a weird line after Kate admits to only knowing him for a week, but I think it's just a spot where the writers couldn't figure out a better way to remind us that Clint told Kate someone hired a widow assassin. He told her that, but maybe the writers forgot. And so Yelena says something about it's not difficult for her to complete her assignment, and that spurs Kate to ask who hired her. I would think the answer would be immediate, that, you know, you're not privileged to that information. But Yelena actually considers it. That opens the door for Kate to plant a seed of doubt. And just like with her mother, she asks her to look into what kind of person would hire her to kill Clint Barton. Maybe it's that for years, Yelena was a weapon pointed at targets, and now she can think for herself. She's more apt to do that because of that. Still, her line at the close of their conversation is, "We are defined by what we do." She asks where Clint is. Kate says she doesn't know. Yelena believes her lie. It's a lie because she knows how to find him, even if that wasn't the question. And then Yelena makes her exit and offers a warning.
Oh, and Kate Bishop, do not get in my way again.
Clint is at Grill's place, and he is somber. Grill's is a gracious host. He welcomes Pizza Dog. Clint asks him to take care of Pizza Dog because he's staying in a pet-free hotel. Grills immediately offers his own couch, even his own bed. Clint is an experienced espionage agent, so I guess he thinks this isn't endangering the innocent here. Grills says he's got costumes for Clint and Kate from Missy, and the trust Clint has to stay here at this apartment is really surprising. He found Grills through social media. I think it's reasonable to assume Yelena came to New York because of social media. I would think that Missy, or Orville, or Wendy, or even Grills may have bragged about being so close to Clint, and wouldn't that be a red flag for a widow? That might be enough of a clue for someone to watch out on one of their apartments. You know, watch where they would go, right? Who comes in and who comes out? Maybe Clint is just counting on this being a one-night deal.
I've never worked a day in my life.
Kate heads to the penthouse, and when she arrives, Detective Caudill is there, along with a Detective Rivera. Apparently, he is no longer interested in Kate's apartment fire. He doesn't even mention anything to her. Maybe Mom explained it all away, but he's very interested in Jack. Eleanor called the police on Jack, but not only does he say he'd have done the same thing, I think he knew it and is in on what is really just a show for Kate. Since it's Caudill and Detective Rivera, I don't think they're dirty, but they still could be. Now, if it's a legit arrest, the evidence that framed Jack could just as easily disappear. Or new information could be planted that frees him. He's not worried in the least.
I'll clear all this up and be back in a jiffy for your Christmas party. You'll see.
Clint is in bad headspace right now, so he ends up going to talk to Natasha. No, not through supernatural means or a trip to Vormir. He goes to a memorial for the Battle of New York and takes out his hearing aid and speaks from the heart. The emotion here in the scene was undercut by his closing line. He says, "I'm sorry for what I'm about to do." I think what we end up seeing him do is brave and heroic. Why would she be sorry about that?
So I'm sorry, monsieur.
And I'm so sorry for what I'm about to do.
Kate's resting back in her old childhood bedroom, trying to get herself comfortable. And when we first see the scene, it's a little out of focus. Maybe to signify her headspace, like Clint's. She looks around her room at the monuments to milestones in her life. And I don't know what I thought I was going to catch, but I froze the stream from time to time to see what I could see. First, behind the picture of her and her dad climbing, there was a boomerang. which I thought helped call back the boomerang arrows she asked about last episode. She was in the National Honor Society at the prestigious All-Girls Spence School in New York City. I noticed also prominently displayed was the Bishop Security Holiday Party invitation. It's for the December 24th in 30 Rock. So I guess that's where we're going to go next episode. And there was also a printout picture of Clint Barton with the words "Hero Worship" on it. But Kate focuses on her first bow, the first one she ever had, and she chooses her path in that moment. The way she goes about it is almost out of a Favreau movie, Swingers. She calls and calls and calls, even blaming Clint at one point for her calling so much. You know, too much. So much that the voicemail inbox is full.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time.
So Kate's been leaving Clint messages, and then the next scene, Clint sends one to Maya, though it's through her goons, Ivan and Thomas. The conversation they're having in the Trust a Bro truck before the arrow comes through the windshield is a little bit amusing. At least we know why they're so proud to wear the tracksuits. It's because of pop culture, guys like Tony Soprano, although if you take Tomas at his word, the Royal Tenenbaums are also an influence. I liked that movie, but it's not a gangster movie. It's a movie about a guy who lies to his family about a terminal illness to spend more time with them now in their failed adult lives after having ignored them for years when they were successful in their youth. I don't see a tie-in, except Ben Stiller's character and his character's sons wore tracksuits in the film. Anyway, Clint fires an arrow that almost kills Tomas, but it has a compartment for a message that tells Maya, meet him where she first met the Ronin, alone.
But we are not Maya.
We then go to Clint, who's making a phone call as he heads back to pick up his stashed suit and sword. He's calling Laura, but he's not going to leave a message. She answers. She's not really asking her for permission to stay and finish things, but he also kind of is. It's telling to me that Laura comes right out and says she will understand more than anyone else ever could. She's too calm to not have been in the spy life, right? Honestly, at this point, if we don't hear about her past, I'm going to be extremely upset. That will seem like a really big dropped ball by the writing staff.
I love you.
I love you. Go ahead, Ness.
Maya is waiting in the parking lot of Fat Man's Used Cars, but she's not alone. Kazi is the first of her accomplices to get taken out. Clint knocks him out cold from his sniper's nest in the sign. Then her guys start getting taken down, probably by retracting ropes, because it plays out almost like a horror suspense sequence with the guys disappearing so quickly under cars. Maya can't hear any of it, of course, which makes it even more believable, right? She can't hear, so she has to rely on her sight, and if she's not looking at them when Ronan is attacking, well, then she's not going to act. She does catch on, though, because she's scanning around and she doesn't see her guys at their posts. So she pulls out her gun, starts firing at anything she sees move. In fact, she runs out of bullets. And when she's about to change clips, that's when Ronan makes his appearance out of the shadows. The fight scene that takes place is a pretty good one. Echo must have had a tremendous sense of balance. You know, she's got a prosthetic leg. And she actually disarms Hawkeye at one point. Clint gets cut on the arm, and then Maya gets cut somewhere on her thigh at the end when Clint gets the sword back. That seems to take her down. The fight is really a highlight for me so far in the show. I don't want to describe it blow by blow. But it can't go on too long, right? I mean, you got to finish a fight somewhere. So Clint takes off his mask, shows her that it's him. Much of the reveal is played silently, shown through Maya's lip reading and Clint's signing. She thinks he's going to kill her. He says no, but he warns her that no one comes after him or his family, or it will be the last thing she does.
You and I were the same.
She calls him a monster, calling back to her discussion maybe with her father about dragons. He points out they are weapons. He imparts some knowledge that maybe Natasha helped him accept. He says, when you're filled with rage, It makes you blind. I could definitely see Natasha saying that to him. I wonder, though, how that plays to a deaf person. You know, being filled with rage, it makes you blind. I would think that a deaf person would be very sensitive to additional handicap references. He says that rage can be used and manipulated. It's from Maya's point of view that we get another reveal in this episode, full of reveals. So Kate talks to Eleanor and tells her that Jack might be a murderer. Yelena talks to Kate and reveals that she's Natasha's sister. Kate to Clint that Jack was arrested. Clint to Laura that the big guy is involved and he isn't ready to come home. Clint to Maya that he's Ronan. So now, Clint reveals he was tipped off that night her father died by an informant that works for her boss. So we learn it was Clint that went on that spree in the auto shop, but that it was basically an inside job. Maya thinks he's lying, but Clint is off guard trying to explain the truth, and she uses it to catch his knee from the ground, which causes him to lunge forward. The sword goes into the grill of the 70s-era Mercury Monarch. Maya pulls him forward, grabs the sword, and she's ready to kill him. Luckily, Kate tracked his phone, and like a sniper, hits the raised sword with an arrow from her spot on the roof. The arrow knocks the sword from Maya's hand. Kate draws another arrow, daring Maya to make a move. But when she turns back to look for Clint, he's not on the ground any longer. The sword is also gone. So Maya hops on her motorcycle and leaves. Kate leaves the rooftop and we see Clint running in an alley and then Kate comes up next to him. It was not lost on me that Clint shades her. He asks her, you know, does your rescue plan include an escape? Remember, he gave her that lesson on the rooftop last episode? You know, always know your escape first. Well, she does, Clint. Clever girl.
Hey, are you Tabitha?
Yes.
All right, hop on in.
We next see Maya waiting for Kazi to meet her in an empty lot, but now we know why Clint knew his name, right? Kazi is that informant he mentioned. Another secret revealed. Maya seems to know, too. First, she sees him struggle with how to react to the news that Ronan got away. It doesn't seem very natural, his reaction. And then for more confirmation, she tests him with, "Why weren't you at the meeting the night my father was killed?" And he doesn't have a good answer.
No, I didn't get the call.
She knows, and I think Kazi thinks she knows too. Clint and Kate are still in the Uber, now Christmas Eve morning, I believe. Kate tells them that she had a chat with the widow from the roof who claims to be Natasha's sister. And say what you want about Jeremy Renner, but he gets a lot out of the two words he's given on that page. His face says a lot more than his lips do. Yelena and okay are the only words that he speaks, but he does a lot of acting with his face there. They exit their ride, and I like the touch added to them silently walking down the street, Clint handing her back an arrow that she saved him with. Remember, because call back to, you know, you got to pick up your own arrow shafts. Then we cut to rain on Christmas Eve, and Eleanor is walking into a building, but she is being tailed by Yelena. It seems Kate's seed of doubt grew a little, and it won't take long for it to bear fruit.
Dance. No, dance.
Our last scene. It's back in Girl's apartment, and we have a sad realization here. So it's Christmas Eve. Hawkeye might be a hero, but Grills has no family at all? Grills, you know, welcomed Clint into his home, I guess, on the night of the 23rd. And he's very cool for putting up with not one but two guests here on the morning of the 24th. They're in his place on Christmas Eve. Even if he doesn't have family, surely then he'd have been an invited guest to one of his good LARP friends or volunteer to go work for someone for Christmas at the fire station?
Grills is cool. You can cook, you can LARP, you can put out fires.
Stop it.
Grills is a good dude, as Kate suggests. It's just a little sad that he seems to be alone and these, you know, intruders seem to be really welcomed guests to him. Anyway, Kate gets a text from an unknown number, but she knows it's Yelena. She is told her mom hired Yelena to kill Clint Barton, and she sent a picture. She asks Clint, "Who's this guy with my mom?" Clint knows.
"Well, that's the guy I've been worried about this whole time. Kingpin."
So, as many people have guessed, including us, Kingpin has moved over from the Netflix Marvel canon to the MCU. Detective Gorin went off the deep end! So, Wilson Fisk making this appearance so late in the series means he's going to be around as an antagonist for a while, right? He's going to make it into the movies. He has to, right? You don't bring him in for one episode and then end it. I'm just wondering if Eleanor hired Yelena. Then what was that scene all about at the end of Black Widow with Val? What was that all about then? Does this implicitly tie Val to Fisk? Is Kingpin assembling some kind of anti-Avenger team? You know, if Val is working with him, he's got John Walker, U.S. agent, right? At the end of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Maybe he's trying out a new Black Widow. Does this also mean that Sharon Carter is also working with the Kingpin? I would think maybe she would have to be. I'm not sure, though. Things I'm looking for, though, in the finale are the callbacks. Things brought up but never paid off, or not paid off yet. You know, the ornament practice, the snap, the bottle cap snap thing. The talk about splitting the arrow in midair. And I do actually think, based on a final episode trailer, that we're going to see that.
"The first arrow you release just has to be wood. So when you release the second one, it splits it right up the middle."
There's also the watch to resolve. Jack's sword fighting prowess. Why bring that up if you're not going to pay that off? A full reveal of the Kingpin, which I really think, I mean, we have to get, right? We got to find out who killed Armand. What exactly led Eleanor down this life of crime? She's going to have a monologue at some point, right? Echo's got to turn from bad to good, right? Otherwise, why are we doing an Echo Disney Plus series about her? Kazi's comeuppance. He's going to have to get paid back, right? For having Echo's father killed, Maya's father killed. We have to learn Laura's backstory. Please, writers, do not leave that hanging for us. You know, are their kids safe? Or are they on the run? And last, but not least, does Clint hand over Hawkeye duties to Kate? How many of these things are we going to see wrapped up? And how many just get forgotten?
"You're a mean one.
What do you think?
Mr. Grinch."
Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter or Instagram at thewayphase4 or on facebook.com/thewayphase4. The finale, episode 6, becomes available on Wednesday, December 22nd. This has been This Is The Way Phase 4's discussion of season 1, episode 5 of Hawkeye. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.